Hello everyone, and a very warm welcome back to Footprints. This month we're spending the whole episode at Bath City Farm. This farm spreads itself across 37 acres of land on the hillside of Bub Bath, amidst the communities of Twerton and Whiteway. We're so delighted to be showing you this farm properly, as we featured it in a number of Footprints episodes before. You might remember the wassailing event with Kilter Theatre Company at the beginning of last year, or the early morning newt survey with Bathscape's Lucy Bartlett and farm trustee Mike Williams. Mike has also talked to me about much of the wildlife that lives here, including Ribbon the Robin. So I thought we'd take a tour of the animals with Ella, the farm's livestock manager. And as we go, we'll meet a variety of people, find out what else happens here. We recorded this on a very wet and windy day in May, and Ella decided to start with the pigs and piglets.
So we've got Whirly and her two piglets, and they are coming up to 2 months now. They're looking quite chunky now. They were very small when they were first born, and now they're just getting really big, but they're still quite sweet.
So we're walking up past all the veg patches, the raised beds, which is called the cafe garden, isn't it? Past some huge strawberry beds, and this is another new construction site just down there.
Yes, that's going to be our hay barn. So we actually have a hay meadow this year, and we're going to take a cut of hay so we don't have to keep buying in hay, and the barn will be where we store it. And I think the plan is also to press apples in there too, so lots going on.
How exciting. So here we are at the pigs.
Don't worry, you're happy to come
in. Oh look, there they are.
So they're actually feeding at the moment, and that's why the mum's making so much of a grumbly noise, because they're getting quite big now.
How many are there?
Just two, actually. She had a really small litter. This is Mangalitsa breed. They're like an old breed, so they have naturally smaller litters than a commercial breed that would have probably 14 piglets, but two is like crazy small, so we were really worried. I'd expect maybe 8 from her, but yeah, 2 was crazy.
They're quite big, aren't they?
So Curly and Whirly.
Whirly and Curly. Hello, Whirly.
They've got big enough to be let out into their wallow area. I do put bits of wood though around, because they love to destroy things. They love to chew wood up. So, and we've got some tires and some football. They love the football. They actually play with it, properly tackle each other. They're actually quite good. They're very funny, and they love a scratch as well. They'll come up to you, roll over, and they'll for a belly rub. They're just very, very tame actually.
But, and have they got names?
They don't know.
Will they stay on the farm, or will they go for pork?
Yeah, they will eventually go and supply our cafe, so it's completely local meat. That's a long way off, because mangalits are very slow growing compared to other breeds, so yeah, they won't. That'll be more a year's time.
Okay.
I think it's good when we know the cafe's being supplied by pigs that we know have had excellent welfare. They've had really good lives. They've seen the whole farm, they've moved around a lot, and then go for meat here. And I think that's a really good system, and a really sustainable one. And that's what we are, because we're a working farm. So I think it's really nice that we can, know where our pigs go. You can hear them suckling.
As we're walking, if you pick a couple of things that sort of has a particular smell and put it in Sarah's tray, bring it back and we'll spend some time with it in a moment. What have we got there?
Elderflowers, different stages. And a little bit of lemon mint.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it?
You can eat it.
Mm. Have you been coming to this group a long time?
Yeah, it's just nice. You don't feel alone when you're here. People just make you feel welcome, basically.
Yeah.
Which is hard to find a lot of the time.
Yeah. Particularly in a city, I guess.
I've lived all over the world.
Have you?
I have. I've come back and I've shifted places. And sometimes it's hard to fit in, you know, because you like, all you do is talk about, like, when you're away.
Yes.
So all you're telling is old stories. It's nice, everyone's here, they've all got their own reasons. I've got my own reasons. So, yeah, it's just nice to be open and chat, you know, it's...
Yeah.
It's very inspiring.
Guys! I'm calling everybody over, otherwise we'll run out of time. I know it's all so lovely at the moment. Come and find a space to sit. This is a little bit wet here. We're just going to do a short arriving and sensory practice. So we'll just be sitting here for a few minutes. So first of all, just taking our time to gently land back into the space we're in, following a busy lunchtime and lots of conversation, just allowing ourselves to gently, slowly sink into our bodies and our sensory awareness as we're sitting here. So we can begin with the sense of touch. Paying attention to anything in our awareness.
My name's Sarah and I'm the Mental Health Programmes Lead.
We've just had a beautiful day with the Natural Pathways group. So that's a group that's funded by Bathscape. Tell me about that group.
Yes, it's a group that supports people with mild to moderate mental health conditions, anxiety, depression, isolation, or for anybody who really understands that being in nature might be supportive of their mental health and their mental health recovery. So we spend time really connecting with nature, using nature as a tool to develop our resilience, our confidence, and support our mental health. So we make use of the full 37 acres of our site, often starting with a mindfulness meditation practice to just slowly allow ourselves to arrive into the environment and feel settled and steady and safe here. And then we might go for a short walk to pay attention to the changing seasons and anything that we notice that's happening on site. And then we will move on to a conservation activity. So we'll be supporting the ecological kind of development and wildlife on the farm. So recently we've been redeveloping a pond. Today we've been doing some dead hedging. We'll be planting some trees soon and just generally everything that supports the wildlife and the developing habitats on the farm. And in doing that, we're really thinking about how we can be purposeful in our attitude and our relationship with nature. We have a shared lunch, which I think you came and joined part of as well.
So I did.
A lovely social time for everybody to come together and share food and a meal in a group, which a lot of people don't get to do. A lot of people who access our groups might live on their own or live quite solitary lives. So being in that social setting is as important as being connected with the nature. And then in the afternoon, we will do a activity. So today you joined us whilst we were making tea. So we went onto the site and found plants that appealed to our sense of smell. And then we made various teas and drinks with them. But we might also practice some art-based activities with the environment as our inspiration. So we might do a big land art piece made out of leaves and petals and twigs. So we made a giant dragonfly recently and a beautiful cascading ombre leaf design, or we might just simply paint something that has inspired us that day.
It's amazing work that you do here, and it seems obvious to me that it's going to be beneficial for everyone, but how do we know that it's beneficial?
So we know that it's beneficial because we base our program on the 5 ways to well-being, and we're told that it's beneficial. So I've been told that coming here has made such a huge difference to people's lives. We know that people feel supported when they're here. They feel less isolated, they feel seen and they feel heard. They know that they're doing purposeful work, and that gives them something that motivates them and supports them to have a sense of purpose in their life again, which has sometimes been missing. As I said, people who are isolated feel a sense of community and care, and taking time to be in nature has so many scientifically proven benefits to supporting people's mental health recovery, and that connection with nature is woven through everything that we do.
It's such a tranquil place here on the farm, isn't it? I mean, I know we're sat at the top in the garden on a beautiful bench, and there is a road behind us and you can hear traffic, but we can also hear the birds. We can see right over across to Lansdowne. And I think that's something about this location that inspires you to look out, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, the location is one of the greatest selling points of the farm. It's a completely unique position on this side of Bath to be able to see the full landscape. And there's actually been research recently that's been completed that shows that having a wide view is really important for mental health recovery as well. So things like being able to see lots of different shades of green, we know is really good for our health and our mental health recovery, but also having a wider view has been shown to improve people's mental health as well, perhaps. And what's really lovely is when you need a wide open space, you can go and find a wide open space, but also when you need a safe little nook or cranny, then there's lots of places where you can just come and find a quiet hidden corner as well. It's a really lovely environment to be able to just explore and wander through.
Onwards, where next? Let's not let them out. Oh, I can see the chickens just on the other side. Pampa chickens live here, it says.
Yes, they are.
Warning, this property is protected by highly trained chickens. Oh, hello. Oh, there's some beauties here, aren't there, Ella?
Yes, they have loads of breeds. And we're actually just hatched some chicks. So they're in a different pen because they're still little. But
So tell me what breeds we've got here.
So we've got some Buff Orpingtons.
Got an incredibly handsome rooster.
Oh yeah, he's gorgeous. He's called, don't fight. He's called Pretty Boy because he is a pretty boy, and he's got massive spurs.
He is really strutting his stuff,
but
isn't he?
He's a very friendly rooster. Normally roosters are like kind of mean, but you can pick him up and everything, and he's like absolutely fine about it. We like to have a mix because then we have all the different types of eggs, because we sell the eggs in the cafe, and it's nice when you have like blue ones and brown ones.
Are there any we can see now?
Should we
have a look?
They might have already been collected.
Yeah.
But let's have a look.
So this is where they roost at night on their perches. Oh, here we go.
I think they've all been collected. Our volunteers are very efficient.
Oh, I can see one. I can see one. Look.
Oh, can you see it? Oh, yes. There we go.
Oh.
That's a lovely brown one.
Freshly laid brown egg. Beautiful. So they lay about one a day?
It depends on the breed. Some of them are quite pretty breeds and they don't lay as much, and it's more in different seasons as well. Like right now they're in a higher like egg laying time.
Okay, well they're all running around and down the hill to find something's happening down the hill, and they're all running down there.
We've got some ducks that like to hang out around there, some of our ducks, so they might be going off to see them. Got a little pond. We're actually hatching some runner ducks at the moment. Indian runner ducks. They're going to be put in our veg patches to eat the slugs.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, yeah, look. One, two, three, four, five ducks.
I think.
Five ducks. Oh, there's two more over there. Seven ducks. And presumably duck eggs?
Yes. Yeah, we do. We've got duck eggs from them and we sell them with the chicken eggs. Duck eggs are actually really great for cakes.
Are they?
Yeah. If you make a cake with duck eggs, it was just going to be like so fluffy and amazing. Mm. Yeah.
I'm Brendan. I'm the director at Bath City Farm. I've been here for 2.5 years.
How long's the farm been here?
Since 1995 as a as a sort of incorporated charity. It's been a farm for a very long time. The farm dates back to the earliest written record, the Domesday Book. The land here was recorded as two estates, and there's probably a history of Roman settlements up the hill as well. So yeah, it's definitely quite a lot of ancient history here. There's some really nice established bits of the site where you've got medieval boundaries and things like that, and some nice mature trees, and I think that makes it quite a special place.
So tell me a little bit about the history, how it's developed over the last few decades.
So it was previously a dairy farm with a tenant farmer. And then when the tenant farmer moved on, the council, who is the landowner, couldn't find another tenant. And it was actually the local community who campaigned to retain it as a community farm for community use. So it was born really out of a community desire to have a farm here. And in 1995, it incorporated as a charity. And I suppose it started off operating just out of those shipping containers that we've got down below, which is sort of the earliest sort of structure that was used by the charity. And then over time, it's grown to have a number of other structures and buildings and things that have emerged as needs have sort of arisen for more facilities. And the sort of projects that we run now with children, young people and adults, they've just evolved over time.
It's an amazing place, and you've got this beautiful new cafe that's sprung up in the last year or so.
Absolutely, it's a fantastic facility. It was finished in May 2022, and it now means we've got a place to cook and prepare the food that we can grow on site and showcase what locally grown food can look like and what sort of healthy seasonal food can be. And also as a meeting place for local residents, which is really positive, and for people who visit the farm.
Yeah, so it is in the heart of the community. It's in Twerton?
That's right, Twerton and Whiteway, we say. So we're sort of in between Twerton and Whiteway neighbourhoods, right in the middle.
So presumably a lot of the people that come through are from those localities.
Yeah, absolutely. We're well used by people locally, and particularly our community events are very well attended and popular by sort of local people.
So what's the vision then? How is it going to change? How will people, if we came in here in 5 years' time, what differences would we see?
Sure, we're really on a journey, and the farm has really kind of prioritised a lot of the therapeutic and educational work. And what we're trying to do now is, in response to the kind of need to produce more food locally and become more climate resilient, is to create the infrastructure to grow more food so that more food can be grown here locally for local people. And so we're in the process of building a new barn and some new polytunnels, which are all part of that process. So we're creating a traditional wildflower meadow as well, which we'll cut for hay. And we're going to store that in our barn. And we're also going to have a community juicing facility there. We recently planted an orchard, now about 200 fruit trees and about 30, 40 nut trees. So as they mature, we'll be able to harvest that produce and turn it into products that we can use and sell here. But also, we'd like to be able to collect fruit that would otherwise go to waste from around the sort of bioregion and turn that into juice here as well. And so for some of that, people could take away themselves and gift some of it to the charity to generate some income and sustain the work that we do.
That's fantastic. I've never heard of that, a community juicing facility.
There are examples around the country, and it's a really nice activity you can do with people. People like the activity of coming. You could, if you just have one or a few trees, you could come with your apples and then be part of the process to actually help turn it into a nice juice.
Possibly then, cider?
Yes, that would take a little bit longer to ferment, but yeah, there's no harm with having a little bit of cider. Yeah, and then the polytunnels themselves, one will be for growing wildflowers. So the idea is to work with people like Bathscapes and National Trust to collect locally collected wildflower seed and then turn that into plug plants that we can sell or use in our own conservation work. And then the other polytunnel will be used to grow more crops. So ideally, we want to become more and more self-sufficient in our cafe with produce that we can grow here, and also create more products like jams, chutneys, preserves, cordials, all these old skills that kind of have existed and evolved over centuries to kind of harvest what is available locally and turn it into products that we can then that have a longer shelf life and make sort of the best use of those products through the season.
So you're kind of showcase getting back to nature and the rhythms of nature and showcasing what can be done and what used to be done but we've lost sight of. But also I guess there's the whole business model of trying to become more self-sufficient so you don't have to rely on too many grants and finding funding. It must take up a lot of your time, I imagine.
Absolutely. As a charity, it is baked into our kind of routine, I suppose, is to these sort of cycles of funding and but we want to as much as possible avoid situations where we have to chase money and kind of be a little bit more in control of what we're doing, and I think largely that is the case here. We very much design our projects based on the need that we witness and experience in the community and then find funders who kind of will support us on that journey, but everything from being able to generate more of our own energy as well can really help.
Tell me about that.
So we're hoping to add more solar to our site soon, which is quite exciting. And yeah, I think there's lots of opportunities to add renewable energy into the mix and then become less reliant on bought-in energy from the grid.
How exciting. And so what's your background?
I have a background in working in sort of community organisations, social enterprises and charities, some environmental, and also community development, and so some community development organisations in the inner city urban areas.
Yeah. It's an amazing place to work, isn't it, Brendan?
I'm very lucky, and I love to combine that real interest in community and social enterprise in to the extent that, you know, we can create the local economies that we want and need, not the ones that are just provided to us by big corporations, but also ones that are healing and restorative and sort of address some of the inequalities that we get from the sort of mainstream models. I think we're very lucky in Bath City Farm that we're able to create that kind of a hub or a beacon or a vessel for that kind of transformation that can occur when you bring people together, add in some meaningful sort of activity like growing food, being in nature, connecting with the natural world and each other, and becoming sort of healthier through participating in food growing and things like that.
That's what we all want, don't we? To become healthier.
Absolutely. And I think you know, obviously there's a lot more around now about mental health needs, and it's becoming a more sort of something we're becoming more aware of. I'm not sure there is necessarily more of it or we're just more aware of it, but certainly I think that City Farms have the ability to address some of those needs. And so also we've seen the growth of social prescribing and green social prescribing, and really there's many kind of illnesses where actually the sort of more prescriptive pharmaceutical approach to addressing those problems maybe isn't getting to the root cause, whereas some of these more sort of social activities potentially can make a difference.
There are City Farms all over the UK, aren't there? Where did that all come from?
It's a good question. I mean, the first one began in Kentish Town in the 70s. So they've had their 50th birthday now. And yeah, I think it was sort of born out of that post-World War era. There was maybe a period where there was some inequalities. There was also maybe a lack of meaningful activity for children and young people to engage with. And many sort of inner city youth who maybe didn't have the opportunity to engage with the rural life and some of the benefits of rural life. And as a result, they've kind of caught on and taken on sort of disused spots and bits of land around the country. And so there is, you know, quite a large network of City Farms. I think it's still as much a relevant movement today. In fact, even more so. I think it probably is going through a process of renewal, and particularly in light of climate crises and emergencies and things, that actually they can become real sort of beacons and places for people to come together and practice resilience and rebuild those tools and confidence to be able to kind of be part of the sort of new transformation that we need.
Thank you, Brendan. Thank you for your time, and thank you for speaking to me today in this beautiful shed where you sell all your lovely plants with the beautiful labels. Somebody is very good at doing labels.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of people care a lot. That's what makes it work.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
The father of the piglets that we met earlier.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah. Neo, you are one handsome pig. What are you, a Berkshire
Boar? Yeah, Berkshire Boar. So the piglets are half Mangalits, are half Berkshire.
Berkshire. So it's Berkshire, isn't it?
That's how I would say it.
Berkshire. So he's black, almost entirely apart from his legs, which are sort of muddy coloured.
Yeah, he's been really enjoying his wallow recently, so he's been kind of caked in mud every day. Especially seeing it's getting hotter, they use mud as like a sunscreen, and also for parasites. The mud dries off in the sun, it drops off and takes parasites with them, so it's really important for the pigs to have a good wallow.
Oh, I never knew that. Hello, do you want to come and say hello? Oh, yes.
I think you can see all the bindweed that
the
gardeners were collecting earlier.
Hi. Beautiful black wiry hair, would you call it?
Fur? Yeah.
Ah, it's more like hair, isn't it, than fur?
Better description.
Yeah, you want to be on the podcast, don't you? Mia, you're the one then. And then in here we've got
our three goats, Pocket, Rocket and Rocky, and they are currently hiding from the rain because goats have fur instead of wool like sheep, so they aren't waterproof, so they hate getting wet, so as soon as the rain comes they're straight in their little huts.
You'd think they'd be used to rain, living in mountainous regions and things.
Yeah, you'd think. They just still dislike it. Kind of like us, we're used to rain, but we still would rather be indoors.
Yeah, what am I saying? We don't like it, do we? Oh, so those are three goats there, but they're not pygmies, because the pygmies are over the other side, are they?
No, these are actually pygmies too. They're just boys, they're slightly bigger.
Yeah. I should imagine they're very popular with the public and with children. The pygmy goats.
They are, and we sell like food, so people love feeding them, and they're always very happy to be fed. So yeah, they're very. They've got sweet little characters. It's fun to watch them.
Roots to Work is a employability program here at the farm where people come to do a placement once a week for up to 6 months in either the cafe, in the gardens, farm gardens, or doing grounds maintenance across site. Or we also have wildlife conservation too, and catering, so cooking. This is open to adults who may be long-term unemployed, who might be struggling with their mental health, who have a learning disability. And it's for people who have worked before and want a change of career, or it's for people who have never worked and they want to see if working is something that they might want to pursue. Because it's time bounded, it's up to 6 months, we really importantly try to find something for them at the end of it or during the programme. Some people are really focused on getting employment, so we work with that. Some people are really focused on getting more volunteering, so we find them more volunteering. So we, you know, try to set some goals and work towards whatever it is they want to get from being here.
The pandemic was very difficult for a lot of people, wasn't it? And it doesn't help if you have work or some kind of social anxiety, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, social anxiety is very common. And I think people just want to sort of... This programme is thought to be a kind of really gentle step into doing something more regular, as I said, if it is employment that they want or volunteering. So we try to find people part-time work, roles that really just suit their capabilities on whatever level it is, or volunteering.
Does this happen nationwide, or is this just on the farm here?
It happens nationwide. We've designed this project quite bespokely for what we have here in terms of staffing and landscape. You know, the cafe was quite new when Roots to Work began, and we've turned it into a training cafe, so it's officially called the Roots to Work Cafe. You know, a really big priority for us at the cafe is working with our trainees and making sure that they're really embedded and part of that cafe and valued and respected. And yeah, we hope that, you know, the name of the cafe tells customers that it's a training cafe, and hopefully, you know, customers have a little bit more patience when it comes to perhaps longer queues and waiting times. And actually, we get a lot of really positive customers who were really complimentary to our trainees and telling them that they get they're doing a good job, and that means the world to a lot of them, and it really boosts people's confidence into thinking, well, actually, I can do this. People want me here. People want me working. People want to see me coming back. And yeah, we love that, and yeah, the trainees love that too. So it's really important.
I guess confidence is a big thing when doing something that might feel daunting, like working. I'm going to go off and see the cafe now. So,
hello, my name's Sarah, and I am the Roots to Work Cafe lead here at Bath City Farm. What I do is take a lead on the cafe here, supporting adults who are quite far from the jobs market. That might be because they have mental health difficulties, or they're long-term unemployed, or they have a learning disability. We support them to develop their skills and confidence in the cafe environment.
So you're training people to do all those things: cooking, serving, getting things ready, dealing with customers. I mean, that's all quite hard to do if you've got things like social anxiety, presumably.
For some people, being front of house and working on the till and using the coffee machine is what really attracts them to the cafe work. But, you know, working on a till is actually quite challenging. You know, it requires a lot of multitasking. You have to greet a customer in a friendly way, be able to listen to what they're ordering, put that into the till, deal with the money, and then take their order either to the kitchen or to the person, the barista, who's making the coffee. So there are a lot of different elements to that. We aim to provide quite intensive support to people until they feel more confident about doing that on their own. And then we have the barista role. So, I mean, that can be a really attractive job. And it's something, if you've got barista skills, there's lots of potential for going out into paid work as well. So that can be very appealing for people. But for other trainees, actually being in the kitchen, where you're away from all of that interaction with customers, is more appropriate, I guess. So we have trainees who are very, very comfortable and happy doing the kitchen porter role or supporting our cooks in the kitchen. So if participants want to specialise, we enable them to do that, but we can also support them to really focus on the area that they're most interested in.
Here's a lovely sheep here.
Our ram Rambo.
And he's got blue and orange dye on his back. What do they mean?
It's to tell me different things about the animals. Say I've given a course of treatment to some animals, I would spray them blue. Like, for instance, I could spray them blue to say I've done this animal, they've had this. If I want to be moving animals, if I'm checking through and I'm like, okay, these ones need to go into a different field, I'd spray them. It's just kind of a way of farmers being able to know what's going on with the sheep.
I always wondered what that was. I see, that's clever.
So you'll see, if we go where our lambs are, you'll see they all have numbers, and that's so I know whose lambs are with who, whose siblings is who, and it just makes it easier for me to see at a glance, oh, you're with the right mum, like, I'm missing you, stuff like that. So,
oh, here we are at the gate. Please keep your dog on a lead and don't take food into the fields, or try and feed them.
Yeah, they can get very excited about food. So if people come in with the goat food, they will be straight for it and probably be a bit overwhelming.
They will run over, they're expecting something.
So yeah, our sheep with the lambs in this field are getting fed, but our other sheep aren't, because these sheep are lactating, other sheep aren't, so they don't need the extra food these ones do. So it would be confusing for people which sheep wanted food and which shouldn't. So.
We've got different sorts of sheep here, have we?
Yeah, we've got three different breeds here. So we've got, interrupting me, we've got our Jacobs, the ones that are black and white. We've got one, you can see they've got four horns, so they can grow multiple sets of horns, which is quite cool. And then we've got our Cotswolds. So these are our Cotswolds. They've got amazing wool.
Do you want to describe their wool? Because it's quite unlike the other two.
It's kind of like they've had a perm, I suppose. And it's just like really long. It's also, I'd say it's like maybe slightly thinner. So this is the Norfolk Horns. They've kind of, it's a lot thicker. But the Cotswold, it's just these beautiful long curly strands. We like having the different breeds
And they've all had little lambs, so there's quite sort of sturdy lambs in the field now, aren't there?
Yeah, they're looking really, really big now. There's we had 13 lambs this year, and 70% were girls, so lots of girls.
Is that unusual?
There's usually slightly more girls than boys.
And do you mind? Does it matter? Do you want more of one or the other?
I prefer more girls because we keep them as replacements.
I'm Russell South.
Russell. Hi, Russell.
I'm a volunteer at Varsity Farm. I've been here for about 10 years, I suppose. I just absolutely love it here. It is absolutely brilliant. I feel bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I get angry sometimes, but that's me. I'm epileptic. I have a bipolar. When I'm around other people sometimes, other people can't handle it, and I've got to do more to rein it in. But I just love being around plants. They are so peaceful. I have a 43-year-old hazel tree outside my door with bird feeders all over it, and I have a family of badgers that come to the door. I put nuts outside them in a saucepan, and I've been as close as we are when I've been lying down on the floor, just hardly moving my face, just watching him eat. The phrase that kept coming to mind with me was shaking hands with nature. It just hits it on the head.
So I'm here with Luke. Luke, tell me who you are.
I am a horticultural assistant here at the farm. I'm part of the adult mental health support program, which is called Roots to Health. And I run a really lovely gardening group, and it's just wonderful to see how a group of people can come together and enjoy being in the outdoors, learning more about horticulture, as am I. I've worked here for 18 months here now, and feel like I've learned so much, both about the land and about people, and how sort of caring for one another and caring for the land can be very restorative, very touching, and good fun. With the vast depletion of ecosystems going on around the world, we are so lucky to have a flourishing ecosystem here, and we're doing all we can to support it, to steward it, to treat it respectfully. And I guess that's what this gardening group is all about. We have a kind of approach here to gardening and horticulture, which is that we try to leave some patches fairly wild because that supports the wildlife. We have over 1,300 species here in a 37-acre site. And partly that's because we just leave stuff alone. But we also, looking around, you know, there's some more cultivated flowers, there's some vegetables. So we're doing that too, and we do weed more. Today, a Wednesday in May, we're doing quite a lot of weeding just to clear some pathways, and that's about people being able to enjoy and access the site. So there's so many different things going on there in terms of leaving stuff alone, letting it flourish, managing things a bit as well, planning. So that sets up all sorts of different opportunities. And it seems to me from 18 months of working here that most of our volunteers love it here, and they feel that it's a kind of home, and it's an opportunity to work in the outdoors in all weathers. It's raining today. It was hot and sunny 2 days ago when I was last here. What I notice is that the site and people's engagement with the site is the main sort of therapeutic thing we have to offer here. We also have some lovely, very knowledgeable staff as well who are very good at supporting people. But I think their work, and I speak for myself, is really aided by having the site here. I know that if I'm trying to support a group, I'm in a really beautiful environment that provides all these opportunities to connect with the land and for group members to connect with one another as well.
And here we are back at the back at the heart of the farm, I suppose, where the office is, and there's the shed, the man shed, is it?
We're just calling it the shed because it's like for woodworking for over 50s, but we're going to have women in there as well, so ours is just going to be called the bath shed.
Oh, thank you so much, Ella, for showing me round.
Thank you. Thanks for chatting to me and having a look at the animals.
Well, that's it for this episode of Footprints. Thank you for joining me. Don't forget you can listen to all the previous episodes anytime you like. And please, please share as widely as you can with your friends, family and colleagues. And for more information on Bathscape, visit the website bathscape.co.uk. Thanks too to the National Lottery Heritage Fund and Players of the National Lottery for supporting our work. Footprints was hosted and produced by me, Pommy Harmer. And I'll see you next month.